You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com. Have you ever wondered what it's like inside a screenwriter's mind? In this podcast, we explore how successful screenwriters tackle structure, plot, character, dialogue, and the film business. Get ready to go down the rabbit hole of story as we pull the best interviews from the archives of the IFH Podcast Network. Let's travel inside the screenwriter's mind. This episode originally aired on the Make Your Movie with Dave Bullis podcast.
Now, today's show is sponsored by Bulletproof Script Coverage. Now, unlike other script coverage services, Bulletproof Script Coverage actually focuses on the kind of project you are and the goals of the project you are. So we actually break it down by three categories: micro budget, indie film market, and studio film. There's no reason to get coverage from a reader that's used to reading tentpole movies when your movie's going to be done for $100,000. And we wanted to focus on that at Bulletproof Script Coverage. Our readers have worked with Marvel Studios, CAA, WME, NBC, HBO, Disney, Scott Free, Warner Brothers, The Blacklist, and many, many more. So if you need your screenplay or TV script covered by professional readers, head on over to covermyscreenplay.com. And today's show is also sponsored by the Heart Chart Screenwriting Masterclass, taught by legendary screenwriter James V. Hart, the writer of Bram Stoker's Dracula, Hook, and Contact, to name a few. His unique story mapping system will teach you how to get your script ready for production and the marketplace. To gain instant access, head over to bulletproofscreenwriting.tv/heart chart. That's H-A-R-T chart.
On this episode of the Dave Bullis Podcast, I'm going to talk to a guest who's worked in production, development, and business affairs for companies like the Weinsteins, Marvel, Beacon Pictures, and a few startups in between. He sold his first feature film, The Right Girl, with, remember Bob Sands? He wrote it with him in 2012. And actually, that movie was released by Pixel Movie Channel in November 2015. This is episode 175 with guest Jeff Willis. We have a mutual friend of the Thornton Brothers. And we also, and the actual real reason I actually found you was through another mutual friend, which is Scott Myers at Go Into Story. And he actually posted about your tweet storm about script consultants, and that's actually how we met, by the way. And but it's always funny that we have so many mutual friends, though.
Yeah, no, it's a it's a great community. The screenwriting community and the entertainment industry is such a small business, and so many people don't quite understand that until you really start talking and realizing you know someone that knows someone else. So it's always fun to kind of run into people who are mutual acquaintances you haven't met yet. And I discovered your podcast through Bob and the Thornton Brothers. It's been on my regular rotation ever since.
Oh, well, you know, thank you. I really do appreciate that. And, you just touched on something, too, that I often talk about, which is people who, like, you know, burn bridges, or maybe they don't even understand how small this industry is. That's why when I tell people, if you're going to be on social media as a filmmaker, you should really not, like, go out there and be like, let me tell you about this one guy. He sucks. And just I've seen people do that. And I'll give you a quick example. There was a guy one time who got burned at a networking event because he paid to get in and he didn't get any chicken fingers. So he posted on Facebook, and this is a true story, as ridiculous as this sounds, he posted on Facebook running the people down who were running the networking event. And they were like, you know, all you had to do was come talk to us. You didn't have to run us down on Facebook. I mean, and it just got, and all these people got pulled into it. It was stuff like that. And you sit there, guys like me or whatever, or read this, and we're like, why would anybody want to work with you after this?
Yeah, it's really tough. And, you know, and working on both sides of the table, I see that. I mean, you know, as a writer, I certainly understand frustrations that come from the process. I mean, it is not an easy, straightforward, or even linear process a lot of the times. So, you know, it's certainly understandable the frustration that comes when a project doesn't work out like you thought, or, you know, doesn't end up, you know, going in the direction you thought it was going to go despite all your hard work. And I totally understand the, you know, the inclination to want to vent about that or complain. But when you do that on social media from the other side of the table, I can't count the number of times I've seen, you know, seen someone go on a tweet rant or post something on Facebook or just go off on a company that they feel wronged them. And, you know, the response from the companies is, well, you know, I hope they enjoyed working with us because they're not going to do it again. And it's really unfortunate that people, you know, that treat social media like a, you know, sounding board, and they don't realize that other people are paying attention and, you know, and sometimes choose not to work with them after that if it's a particularly difficult situation or a particularly outspoken, you know, rant, and it could have been resolved with just a phone call or just a, you know, conversation one-on-one saying, hey, I'm not happy with the way things worked out.
You know, it's kind of funny too, Jeff. It's like the people you meet in real life, right? The people you that maybe say, oh, hey, Jeff, you know, how's it going, buddy? And then you say, well, you know, it's going good. And you ask them, well, how's it going? And they just go, oh, everything sucks, you know, and this thing's terrible and this blah, blah, blah. And then after they get done all this ranting and raving and all this negative, you know, energy, they then say to you, so, Jeff, if you ever want to work together, man, just let me know. And you're like, okay, sure,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah, there's been a few of those where it doesn't seem like it'd be that fun to work with someone that's that unhappy. But you know, I'm an optimistic person by nature, so maybe we just see things fundamentally differently.
Yeah, it's just like after somebody would say something like that, you're like, well, why would I want to work with you? You politely say, oh yeah, sure, man, absolutely. And then you're like, well, I'm never that's never gonna happen. But hey, you know what? I mean, you know, most of those people who are unhappy in real life, they give it, social media gives them a voice, and they abuse that voice because it's always the negativity, you know, and they do other like networking faux pas by doing things like they'll get onto Facebook or Twitter or whatever, especially Facebook, and they friend request every single person that they possibly can. And then then it's like, what's the point of this? If you're not even going to talk to these people, you know, it's kind of like a waste of everyone's time.
Yeah, it's really difficult. I try to separate my, you know, my social media from my professional life, at least in terms of, you know, it's something you can communicate with and talk to people, and build a community. But yeah, the idea of just, you know, marrying my social media with my work is just, you know, just kind of gives me the creeps. I mean, I usually don't request friends on Facebook until I've already left the company, just because it's like, it's easier to keep them separate. But yeah, it's, you know, social media is an amazing resource, and it's an amazing asset. I use it every day, but, there are definitely some, you know, some norms and, you know, new frontiers that we have to learn how to deal with as writers now that it's become so popular.
Yeah, and you know, and speaking of, you know, how it's become so popular for writers, you know, again, how we met was through the posting on Going to Story about our mutual friend Scott. By the way, for everyone listening, if you haven't heard of Scott and Going to Story, I really recommend it. Scott's an awesome guy, always very, very supportive of everybody, and always really showing people what it's really like in the writing trenches. And it's also the official website of the Blacklist. So it's a really good resource. I'll link to it in the show notes. But Jeff, you and I have actually met through this, and he actually had an article about, you know, about you created a lot of, you started, you know, what he called a tweet storm, which is basically you mentioned a lot about script consultants, and you did that on the script chat, you know, Twitter resource every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's, you know, it's a tweet chat with script chat. And you mentioned a lot about script consultants. So, you know, Jeff, could you take us through? I mean, I don't know how many people listening, you know, actually were involved in the chat. But, you know, what are some of the things you think about, you know, for script consultants, for writers? Because this, again, you know, social media has opened up so many doors for people. And I think it's very good to have a discussion like this where you're actually talking about script consultants and if they're actually worth it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me and I always kind of laugh because my little, you know, tweet series are sometimes called, you know, rants or, you know, or things like that. And I'm actually fairly calm online. So it always kind of amuses me that it seems like it just is like angry tirade. But the thing about script consultants that always kind of gets me is that, you know, as writers, we are constantly seeking approval. I mean, it's a subjective thing we're creating. And at the end of the day, someone needs to say they like it and want to buy it in order to get paid for it. It's not like, you know, a product that you create that goes on a shelf that people can, you know, can buy at a Walmart or a Target. It's something that someone has to like. So there's no guarantee that what you've written, even if it's really good, is guaranteed to sell. And consultants are, you know, people who obviously offer their input and advice. They tell you how to make a script better. They tell you what you can do to make it more marketable. And the problem that I have with a lot of consultants is that at the end, no matter what, you know, no matter who it is, no matter what their pedigree is, at the end of the day, when someone gives you advice or input on a script, it is one person's opinion. And that person may or may not match up with someone else that's reading it. So where I have a problem with script consultants is ones that charge a lot of money. Well, I don't see anything fundamentally wrong with paying for advice if you can't get it on your own. Like if you're in the middle of nowhere and have no connection, no one that is offering, you know, for a nominal amount to read your script or give you notes or, you know, give you coverage. There's certainly nothing wrong with that. Where I start to have a problem with consultants is when they start charging an exorbitant amount of money, hundreds of dollars or thousands of dollars. Because at the end of the day, they're charging an exorbitant amount of money for what amounts to one person's opinion, with no guarantee that that one opinion will make your script objectively good enough to guarantee to sell. So that's really where I come down on the side of script consultants is, you know, whether a, you know, a consultant is someone you officially pay for a little amount of money or a friend that's another screenwriter that can read it for you. You know, feedback is incredibly important, but I try to urge newer writers especially to kind of get away from the idea that they have to pay money for an opinion, that they need to spend money to make their writing better, because there are just a ton of different options to do that. And very few of them involve actually shelling out money to someone who claims to be an expert, regardless of, you know, what their experience may be.
Yeah. You know, it was funny, a couple of years back, I was actually part of this networking group here in Philadelphia for the film community. And we got contacted by a script consultant. And he actually came out here, and he was going to go to New York, and he said, "Hey, how about this? I go down to Philly." He goes, "I didn't know there was this big of an audience in Philly, and here's what I can do for you." He goes, "I have such a deep contact list." He goes, "I'll do this screenwriting workshop," and he goes, "You know, I have such a deep network. I can call up and get Vin Diesel on the phone, or I can call up and get blah 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 on the phone." And the guy who ran it hasn't like been around as much as long as I have. And he goes, "Is this guy serious?" And I said, "This guy sounds like the biggest scam artist I've ever heard of in my life." Because you know, if he's talking about that, I said, "Why on earth would he have all these things and then need to come out here to Philadelphia to pitch to us about screenplays?"
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, and that's kind of for me one of the fundamental, you know, conflicts of, you know, or an oxymoron of being a script consultant is, you know, scripts by nature, most of them aren't very good. And I know everyone likes to think that theirs is, you know, original or theirs is the one that will make a difference. But as someone who was a script reader for a lot of years and as someone who even did some consulting for a while, you know, it is a true thing to say that probably 9 out of 10 scripts out there, if not more, are just not at a point where, you know, they're worth developing or taking further or turning into a movie or even optioning and exploring. And the problem is that, you know, because of that, the answer for 9 out of 10 people is, "I'm sorry, the script just isn't good enough," or "this script isn't going to cut it." And when you have a script consultant who's being paid to give you advice, you know, they're right in that, you know, charging someone $500 and then saying, "Oh, your script sucks, I'm sorry," is not going to be a good business model. People aren't going to feel satisfied with that. So there's a tendency for people to, you know, to want to, you know, give value by giving notes. But a lot of times, and the thing I've learned over the years is that some scripts you need to say, this one just isn't working. You should start on something else. But that's kind of in diametric opposition to what a script consultant needs to do, which is say, you know, "I've spent a lot of time reading it, and here's the things you can do to improve it." And then on top of that, the other thing I tend to point out too is that since most scripts aren't very good, and it's just a statistical fact. You know, the people who say that they have connections to people, that they can call Vin Diesel and have him read the script, or that they have a, you know, friend at CAA that can read things. You know, if that's the consultant's pitch, there's really only two types of people that consultant is. It's the person who will only send the best things they have, in which case there's no guarantee he'll send every script that someone pays to consult on, or the kind of person who really sends that comes across their desk, in which case I guarantee you Vin Diesel or their friend at CAA isn't reading everything they send, because after the first 20 terrible scripts, they're not going to trust their taste. So it's one of those really tough things where, and the one kind of golden rule I give people for script consulting is that you should absolutely not pay for access. If you want to pay someone for their advice, if you want to pay someone for their notes or their expertise or their insight, that is 100% okay. You know, if you think that's going to help you become a better writer, great. But don't ever pay someone who promises they can get your script onto the desk of someone that they, you know, of some industry gatekeeper. Because paying for access is where you start paying lots of money for essentially no value. Because, like I said, it's either someone who, you know, who is not going to send everything they get, or someone that is going to send everything they get and therefore is not being paid attention to by the people they say they can have access to.
Yeah, yeah. So it is that sort of they fall into one of those two columns because and I've noticed this too, where people who try to say they can get access to things like, hey, I have access to people at X, Y, and Z, and I can get you, and I could send my scripts over there, or the people who say things like, hey, listen, if you pass, we send it off to this other person, and you know, I've never, of all the people I know, and I know a lot of people, I've never heard of anything like that working. I have heard of one thing kind of sort of working. I want to pick your brain about that, Jeff, is there is a, I won't mention the name of this company, but they apparently are highly regarded. And when somebody once told me was if they actually approve your script or get like a recommend, you can put that on an email query. And in the subject line, he actually put, you know, blank, blank recommended. And he said an agent actually opened it and actually wanted to see the script based on that. Have you ever heard of anything like that ever working?
I mean, desk services that provide, you know, that from one way or another have access to industry contacts. A lot of agents' assistants will judge screenplay competitions. So, you know, that's when you see a contest that says, oh, you know, the winner will be read by CAA or whatever. It's probably, you know, a new assistant looking to build a client list who is volunteering to judge, you know, the best screenplay so that they can have a conversation about it. So that stuff is fairly common, especially among lower level executives. And I would caution people, you know, if it says that, you know, hey, you know, Warner Brothers is going to read, you know, read the winning draft, it's probably not Jeff Johns or Kevin Tushihara or someone, you know, at the very top. It's probably a lower level person. So, in that sense, yes, some of these things do provide a limited amount of access, but at the end of the day, it's still not a guarantee. And again, you know, you kind of hit the nail on the head. You know, when someone says, oh, if it gets a recommend or if it gets a, you know, whatever, first of all, you're paying for the chance that someone will think it's that good. And second of all, you know, even though it will get to someone, there's no guarantee that that person will then, you know, think the same. And, you know, and you and I have both read enough scripts where, you know, we've seen ones where because one person recommends, it does not necessarily mean it's a recommend by everyone. You know, in the entertainment industry, things go up the chain. The assistant reads it, and then, you know, a development exec reads it, then a VP reads it, then the head of the company reads it. And at various parts, it could say, oh, the assistant loved it, the CE loved it, oh, but the VP didn't, so it's a pass now. So I would just caution people when something promises access or that someone will read it, it's not necessarily a guaranteed, like, I am one degree of separation away from getting a green light on this thing. It is merely, you know, this is an opportunity to have a potential point of entry, which is not a guarantee.
So, and as we sort of take this a step further too, Jeff, you know, there's a couple different, I guess, like, you know, services like that who offer, say, hey, listen, you know, we're going to have a screenplay competition. You know, we're going to have a this or that. Or even like a local film festival is going to have a screenplay competition. You know, winning those, I actually had a friend of mine who won a ton of those, and it never really amounted to anything. He ended up getting a job as a writing on assignment because of his contacts, you know, because of his network. And, you know, I see all these screenwriting competitions out there, and I'm always wondering, you know, obviously we know like the Big Ten, obviously, or maybe even the Big Five. But the other ones, though, I really want, you know, whenever I see people like winning them and nothing ever happens, I often wonder, you know, why do people keep entering them if nobody ever really like gets to have their screenplay made, you know, or something? You know, I'm always wondering, you know, what's the end goal with that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think, you know, and you know, writing is a very solitary and often discouraging process. So, you know, I know a lot of people that enter those contests just for, you know, just for the validation. You know, if you can beat out, you know, 500 other screenplays in the, you know, Oklahoma City Film Festival, you know, that, and you can say that, hey, I won a screenplay competition. I was the best of all that entered. You know, there's some value to that, if nothing else than in your own, you know, for your own sense of confidence and, you know, assuredness in your work. But, you know, the problem with so many of these contests is there are so many of them now that they've really started diluting the significance of what it means to win them. So, you know, like you mentioned, there's a handful of ones that are still legitimately recognized as, you know, if you can become a finalist or win one of those competitions, you know, people take notice. The Nickel is the biggest example of that. There are still agents out there that request the top 10 finalists every year to read them and get to know, what's sticking out this year. But if it's a smaller contest or a smaller competition, that really doesn't move the needle for people anymore to say, the Temecula International, you know, Wine Tasting Film Festival screenplay competition, I was a finalist because more than anything, people don't really understand, you know, the smaller contest. Was it out of 20 scripts? Was it out of 2,000? Who was judging it? Who's determining the quality of the winner? What's the judging criteria? Something like Nickel is understood across the industry to have a certain quality standard. And you know that if it wins, you know, it's among whatever 10,000 entries or something like that. So it's a high mark to pass. Some of these smaller festivals and opportunities, it's not. So, a lot of times it doesn't really move the needle for creative execs. And at the end of the day, you may put that on a cover letter and say, hey, I won a screenplay competition. And you may get someone to take a flyer on that. An assistant or an up and coming agent might say, you know, I'll give it a shot. But, you know, it's not a guarantee. And that's why, you know, much like script consulting, I don't recommend that people enter screenplay competitions with huge fees. You know, if it's $25 and you're okay spending $25, you know, getting your script considered and maybe, you know, having bragging rights that you placed in the contest, that's great. You know, if the entry fee is $500, and, you know, it's not going to do much for you, I'm more of a fan of writers saving their money and, you know, using that to, you know, improve their craft in other ways by, you know, attending seminars or classes or things like that that they can do to improve their craft.
Yeah, you know, and that was actually going to be my next question, too, is, you know, what are some of the things that you recommend, you know, instead of maybe paying $500 or $1,000 for a script consultant that they may be found online, you know, what are some of the things that writers can do? Let's just say a writer is living in the middle of nowhere. What are some of the things that they could do to actually better their career rather than paying a script consultant like that, those fees like $500 or $1,000?
I mean, hands down, the best thing you can do is read scripts and write your own. So, you know, these days there's ample opportunity to get scripts online, either above board or kind of on the down low. But there's plenty of places where you can get screenplays. And the best thing you can do as a writer is read other screenplays and figure out what works, what doesn't, you know, what, as you read it on the page, you know, excites you, what bores you. So then you kind of get a sense of the things that, you know, that make a good script. And then you just have to keep writing them yourself. A long time ago when I was in film school, I was a big believer in, you know, screenwriting books. I still have, you know, shelves full of them. And those can be interesting at times if you're a fan of, you know, creative criticism or, you know, or literary study, literary theory, that kind of stuff. And that stuff can have limited usefulness, but at the end of the day, nothing really replaces the amount of stuff you can learn from reading and writing yourself. And that's true of script consultants too. I mean, if you spend $500 on a script consultant to give you a set of notes on your screenplay, that may give you some insight on, you know, what works and what doesn't. But at the end of the day, it's someone else analyzing it and telling you what you missed or what you can improve on. Whereas if you read and write and keep doing that, eventually you'll be able to do that for yourself. And, you know, I've seen friends who, you know, are just starting out and, you know, they write a script, which is a mess, and you tell them all the things that are wrong. And if they never read scripts and keep trying to write on their own, each time they write something, they're basically waiting for someone else to tell them, here's the problem, here's the problem, here's a problem, here's what you need to fix. Whereas writers who are consistently reading and practice start to develop their own ability to analyze that stuff. And, you know, you'll never be able to catch all the things in your own writing, but I have seen writers do amazing things where they write a draft and then read through it and find their own problems and are able to fix it. And hey, that'll save you that consulting fee every time.
Yeah, because, you know, screenwriting is a combination of many, many skills. That's sort of why I think when people say they're just going to start screenwriting, and when I've had people who've emailed me, who've met me in person, they're like, writing a 10-page or 50 pages on a weekend is nothing. I can blow through that. And I said, yeah, you probably could. It's not going to be any good, but yeah, you could definitely, it's not going to be anything of worthwhile, especially if this is your first screenplay. It takes those skills you're developing of creating an idea, of being able to make sure that you have enough to actually fill a 90 or 100 page screenplay, of making character introductions, of finding themes and dialogue, and again, of all these other things. And it takes a while of learning how to do that stuff, you know? And I think all of us in some way have had that dream where our first screenplay was going to win Sundance or whatever else. And next thing you know, we're winning an Academy Award and we're living in a mansion in Beverly Hills.
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty sure by this, you know, by this point in my life, I wrote my first script in high school. And, you know, now that I'm in my 30s, I was pretty sure that I would be, you know, retired on my own private island by this point. But, you know, it just hasn't quite worked out that way. And it is, it's true of any kind of writing, you know, that it, each one is a skill. Each one is, you know, requires a certain amount of, you know, practice with, you know, the nuances and tropes and, you know, style of the genre. I mean, I have a lot of writing friends write novels and stuff. And it is amazing how many of them, you know, can crank out an 80,000 word novel, and it's really good. And then they look at screenwriting and say, well, the average screenplay is only 17,000 words. I mean, that's a walk in the park. I can knock that out in 2 weekends and it's going to be great. And then they sit down to do it and they say, oh man, that was really, well, you know, of those 17,000 words, you know, 5,000 of them were, you know, description of the setting, which you don't really need, and you kind of need some more action in there. So it's amazing how tough screenwriting really is to do well. It's easy to do badly, but it's really tough to do well. And I don't think people really understand that until they write something and get feedback on it for the first time.
Yeah, you know, getting feedback on something for the first time, I've been there. You might think something's great, or you might know something's bad and you're going to get teed off on, so to speak. And I've been there too. When I actually was a part of a couple different writers group, and the one that I actually learned the most from was where everyone was actually the hardest on everybody else. And trust me, my style of screenwriting is I like to, you know, I write what I want to see, and I would just get two guys never got what I was doing. And they would always just be like so harsh on everything. And you know, finally, I'm just like, you know, now if I ever go out somewhere else, it's just easy to navigate because how hard they were on me. And it wasn't like they had industry contacts or anything like that. They just flat out were like, what the hell? You know what I mean? They just didn't get it, so to speak.
Yeah, it's especially when you're starting out, it is hard to find that group of people that you rely on. I mean, every successful writer that I know has a close-knit group of people that they can send stuff to. And, you know, the funny thing is, even, you know, even after you've been writing for 10 or 15 years, you're still going to write stuff that people are going to read and say, yeah, that just didn't work. I think you needed to throw this out, which, you know, may sound a little discouraging, but, you know, at least everyone goes through it. But yeah, it's, you know, it's finding that group of people that can really, you know, give you some insight into your work. And it doesn't necessarily have to be one person that's great at everything. You could have a friend that's good at story or good at characters or understands dialogue or structure or pacing. And, you know, and it's important to find that group of people that can read it and then help you improve it. Because, you know, as much as the writing fantasy is out there that, you know, you can write off a page and then send it off and it's, you know, cash a check, you know, so much of writing and screenwriting in particular, since it's such a collaborative meeting, is doing notes and doing revisions and coming back and trying new things and writing 6 different versions until you find the one that works. So, you know, finding that group of people that can help you go through that and help you find those areas of improvement without necessarily crushing your spirit every time is a valuable thing to find.
So, you know, Jeff, let me ask you this. If there is somebody out there who had maybe, you know, and this has happened to me too, I had a lack of confidence. Eventually, you know, you get your spirit gets crushed so many times, it's, you know, for like the 50th time or whatever, and it's hard to get back up. You know, and I've been there too, and I know how frustrating it can be sometimes. What advice would you give to somebody whose spirit has been crushed, and they're just looking to get back into it?
You know, I think that it's, especially in screenwriting, where so much of the process is out of your control. I mean, you know, if you self-publish a novel, you basically write the thing, and then once you've decided it's good enough, you can put it out in the world, and people can buy it. The thing that's tough about screenwriting is you can write something, and even if you're sure that it's the best it can possibly be, a lot of times you're sending it and waiting for someone else to hear back. You're waiting for an agent to read it. You're waiting for an agent to submit it to a production company, and the production company has to read it. Even if someone buys the script, you're waiting for them to read the latest rewrite and give you notes and figure out where to go from there and see if the director or the actor has, you know, thoughts on it. So in screenwriting, discouragement is, you know, it can creep in pretty much anywhere in the process. And what I typically recommend for people and what I do for myself a lot is I find another writing medium, because at the end of the day, the reason I write is because I love to write. And what I do is when the screenwriting aspect is frustrating, or when all of my scripts and all of my potential is out waiting for other people to hear back, I'll write something else on my own for me. I'll write a short story, or I'll try to self-publish a novel, or I'll do something like that that kind of reminds me of the excitement and the passion of actually writing the things that I kind of fell in love with in the first place. And it's why I do it, because that can be a really great way to kind of shake that frustration that comes from the hurry up and wait, where you're just kind of constantly feel like you're spinning your wheels. So I would really recommend that. And it doesn't necessarily have to be writing. It could be if you're into, you know, music, or, you know, some other kind of creative endeavor, painting, sculpture, even exercise, or, you know, or a hobby of some other kind. I just, when frustration strikes, I think the best thing you can do is mix things up a little, which is why it's so important that in addition to screenwriting, you have at least one other interest in your life, so that you can then put your energy into that when you need to recharge and take a step back.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
Yeah. And I think it's like, kind of like that saying where it's two steps forward, one step back. And you're always sort of, you know, you're going forward. And one of the things to get better is, you know, you have to have persistence. You have to have dedication to whatever you're doing. I've learned that, you know, commitment. Let's call it commitment. A commitment to get better, a commitment to keep excelling, a commitment to keep moving that meter of your career, to keep getting more and more professional. You know, and I see, you know, and that's the thing, too. And where everyone, you know, we're in the era now where everyone has a cell phone, everyone's a filmmaker, you know, and now it's sort of like, again, all the people I meet, whether it be from this podcast or from any other endeavor, everyone, you know, used to think, hey, listen, I could write a screenplay, whatever, and you know, or make a movie or whatever. And my whole thing is, yeah, you probably could, but it's just not going to be any good. You know what I mean? It's not going to be have any substance to it. So that's why I'm always saying, you know, you got to get better. Make a crappy student film. Like Robert Rodriguez says, you've got like 10 or 20 bad movies in you. Get them out as quickly as possible by making short films for no money. And like the Duplass brothers mentioned, too, is just making these movies and just, you know, make a $3, $5 movie and then start into like a $100 movie before you start, you know, hey, look, before you start saying to yourself, hey, look, my first movie is going to be, you know, $100,000 or $1 million. And I'm going to have these stars in it. And you know what I mean? It doesn't work like that.
Yeah. It's hard. I mean, they're the problem with the industry is that, and I mean, this is kind of true everywhere, but everyone likes an overnight success story. And so much of the work is done in, you know, in private, that the public at large doesn't see the struggles that lead up to something. So when a writer, you know, sells a screenplay for the first time, it's very attractive. And a lot of the, you know, industry media likes to promote it as a, hey, look, this guy came out of nowhere and sold the script for $1 million. And, you know, all of the aspiring writers think, well, if someone can do that, I can do that too. But what they a lot of times don't see or don't talk about is how that writer, in order to get that $1 million spec sale, may have written 14 scripts that didn't sell before that, or may have had stuff optioned and not made, that may have, you know, if they're finally getting a movie made and they're getting their name on it, they could have had a bunch of stuff they've done rewrites on before that they never got credit for. So it's really tough to, you know, fight that initial instinct that, oh, hey, you know, someone can have instant success and so can I, because instant success is so misleading. And I think people are, you know, the writers who get that it's a long-term goal and it's not a, hey, if I can crank something out and make a bunch of money, then I don't have to, you know, then I don't have to worry and I can just, you know, I can have an easy life. Writers that kind of have that outlook don't tend to last very long and tend to get much more frustrated than the writers who see it as a process and see it as a career. If you look at writing as a career, like, and say an accountant or a financial manager or, you know, office manager or something like that. You know, someone who works in a more traditional, you know, full-time 40-hour a week office job has a long-term view of their career. They're not looking to, you know, make $1 million in 1 week and then go, you know, on a permanent vacation. They're looking at, you know, taking, you know, putting one foot in front of the other every day for years until eventually they, you know, they get in a spot where they can take a vacation or they have a better job or they can save for retirement. And I think writers really need to take that same view, which is, you know, even though the paychecks come in fits and starts and it's not by any means a standard type of job, you need to look at the work like that. Every script is another step forward. You have to keep moving forward, keep taking steps in your career. Eventually, some of them will pay off well, some of them won't. But you have to have that look where it's not a get rich quick at regular intervals kind of thing.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me too of that movie. Have you ever seen the movie Overnight?
No, I haven't seen that one.
Okay, it's about Troy Duffy, who made the Boondock Saints, and it's about basically he was going to be an overnight success, and he got all this publicity, and he he ruined it because it was just his attitude. It was just his attitude. He would lash out at people. There's a saying that type of success is like a truth serum, and it doesn't change people. It just brings what's already there to the surface. And, I've seen that before where, you have a friend who has a monocle of success, and it just changes people sometimes. And it's like they think they've struggled so much that this is what they've deserved all along. I don't know. It's kind of hard to put in a context other than, it's like a truth serum, you know what I mean, Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, I think the best thing you can do as a writer is find other screenwriters and develop a community with them. And the nice and a really great thing about social media is that these days you can have that group without necessarily having to live in the same area. So, I mean, I'm fortunate enough to live in Los Angeles where I can meet up with people, for drinks after work, and we can kind of commiserate in person. But you can have a Facebook group, or a Twitter hashtag, or a message board where you can really talk with other writers and go through the experience. And on the one hand, it's great because it doesn't feel so isolating to be able to talk with other people who are going through a similar struggle. But the other thing it's really great for is kind of giving you a perspective, because it is a feast or famine business. You are either at the top of things and you're making a ton more money than most people make at their job for a very limited amount of time, or you're really struggling to make ends meet. And the thing about having a community that's so powerful is that you get to see people who were struggling for a long time and they finally have a hit. And you may even see people that are struggling for a long time finally have to struggling again. And that perspective is just so important, because it kind of shows you that there's a perspective to all of this, and that the people who do unfortunately tend to think, the minute they first have a hit, that it's all gravy from that point on, are really in a lot of senses misguided, because maintaining that level of success in a subjective industry like this is really hard to do. So I think that writers that can develop community with others and kind of get to know other writers and hear about their experiences have a lot better chance of putting things in context, so that when they do have that lightning strike of good fortune, they don't tend to blow it out of proportion and assume that either it's never going to stop or let it change who they are, because then they have that perspective of that it may not last for very long.
Yeah, and again, you mentioned the feast or famine, and that's sort of what a lot of guests, when we talk about indie film, they mention that, hey, how do you make a living with indie film? Because it seems like it's either feast or famine. Either you're at the top of the game making millions, or you're at the bottom of the game barely making anything. And that's what we always talk about on this podcast, is you have to, as a filmmaker, you have to diversify your income. And basically it means, you make a movie, you don't just sell the movie, you're selling merchandise within the movie. You're offering classes online. You're all doing all these sort of things. You're doing affiliate marketing just to make sure, you're not putting all your eggs in one basket, and that you're actually having many streams of income. Because like they've said, millionaires have seven streams of income. Every millionaire has seven streams of income.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and even if you're someone who, is a middle of the road writer and you're making a little bit of money every once in a while, it's the same general concept. I mean, you may get $50,000 for a 6-week rewrite. But if that's the case, writers, what I really impress upon them to do is take the view that you need to stretch it out as long as possible, figure out a budget for your life, rent, utilities, some amount for fun, that kind of stuff. And you really have to, project it out, because there are so many people that get a big payday, like a rewrite payday, having a vacation, or they get a new car or something like that. And they're not, again, the feast or famine is at some point there will be a famine again. And you want to make sure that you're financially, preparing yourself for those slow periods again. And you know, it's the same thing with a movie. If you're trying to sell an indie movie, and you're negotiating with a distributor to get a minimum guarantee or something, there's such a tendency to, you know, to just take all that big chunk of money and you know, and really celebrate the fact that you hit a home run. But really, I mean, you know, for financial security in this industry where you never quite know where your next payday is coming from, it just makes so much more sense to be more responsible with that and to plan out your finances so that you can cover those slow periods in the future when things aren't turning up roses like they just did.
Yeah, and you know, that's sort of, again, some of the things we always talk about with living in your means on this podcast as well. And I'm sure you've probably seen it too, where, you know, for some people, it's, you know, it's all sunshine and roses one minute, and the next minute, you know, again, they're going back down to, you know, oh my God, I need the next thing now because I just bought a $5 million house or something like that. You know, I just bought a brand new Rolls Royce. But you know, it again, it all affects everyone differently. And, you know, as we've been talking, Jeff, too, I wanted to ask, you know, we haven't really talked about you or what you're up to in terms of, you know, writing and projects and stuff. So I wanted to ask, Jeff, you know, what are you up to in terms of writing and your projects and stuff?
Yeah, you know, it's I go through these since I have a day job in the industry, which tends to keep me a little busy. I go through these really these really like sharp spikes of I'll be really busy and then I'll be really slow. And ever since I started working at Marvel in January 2006, it's been an incredibly rewarding but also really busy process. So I actually haven't written anything for a year and a half, and I'm just now starting to kind of get back into it. I've got a couple of specs that industry contacts of mine have mentioned they're looking for a particular kind of script, and I'm just kind of looking to shake the rust off. So I thought I would. I'm working on a couple of things to try to hopefully fill a niche that I think people are looking for. But yeah, other than that, it's just, you know, it's the same as so many people go through, which is, you know, I had a little success with my script with Bob and everything, and I've done a few rewrites here and there, but I really haven't gotten to that point as a writer where I'm in demand or people are requesting my work. So my writing habits are just about just always writing the next thing, always working on something else so that hopefully one of these days, one of the things does catch and, you know, and I am the one getting the calls for the meetings and to come in and pitch on things.
So, you know, let me ask you, Jeff, because you mentioned you work at Marvel, when people hear that you work at Marvel, whether you're in line at Starbucks or whether you're at a screenwriters meeting or panel or something, do people just come up to you and instinctively try to start pitching you stuff?
You know, I get it a little bit. The thing about Marvel that's nice is that, you know, it's so clearly focused on a game plan that I think a lot of people, especially industry people, have figured out that it's not quite the same as a company like a Lionsgate or a Weinstein, which is kind of always on the lookout for something new. So most of the questions I get are mostly like, what's it like working there? Or, you know, what's coming out next? Or what can you tell me that's a secret? Which, you know, of course I can't. But yeah, there's definitely points in my career where, you know, mentioning that I work in the industry or work for a company that they've heard of or that's working on something, it definitely elicits a great, can I talk to you about, you know, getting my foot in the door? And it's, you know, it's always a difficult conversation to have because I'm a naturally helpful person. And as a writer myself, I want to give everyone a leg up and the best opportunity to succeed with their own work. But, you know, by the same token, I don't work in creative anymore. I don't work, you know, I'm not the person that considers scripts, and I'm definitely not the person that, you know, they're not so interested in the credits guy emailing one of the executive producers and saying, hey, here's a random script someone sent me. Will you check it out? So it can be a little challenging sometimes. But, you know, more than anything, what I really enjoy about my day job is just getting a chance to talk to people about the other side of things. I mean, as a lower level writer, you know, in my own respect, you know, I'm going through the same struggles that everyone else does in terms of, you know, trying to land a project, trying to find someone who's interested, trying to mostly do low budget stuff because that has the best chance of being made. And it's nice to see the perspective at Marvel of being on the complete opposite side of the industry and seeing, you know, all that goes into making a really, really huge, you know, top of the line movie that, you know, everyone's really excited to see and can't wait to see.
Yeah, because I imagine as soon as you mention your Marvel, they were probably like, oh, Jeff, I have this idea, by the way, for Iron Man. You know what I mean? It's like, by the way, when's that, you know, and it's just like, you're like, look, I can't hear any pitches, you know, I just can't hear it. And, you know, I've had a couple of different friends who've worked at different companies like Pixar, and they said as soon as somebody hears they work there, it's just like, oh, by the way, do they accept unsolicited material? It's like, nope, see, best of luck to you.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things where, and I always try to preface the conversation with, you know, that I thank you so much for being excited about that and everything, but I cannot help you. I cannot help you, your writing career take off at Marvel. That's not my job. That's not my role. It wouldn't be appropriate for me to do that. That said, if you want to talk about Marvel movies or anything else, or you're writing, you know, to me as a person, I would love to do that. I would love to, you know, to know more about you and what you're trying to do. But if you're just looking for me to, you know, pass your script along to, you know, to Kevin Feige or one of the producers, that I cannot do. So if that's what you're looking for, like, this conversation isn't going to go much further. But by all means, if you want to personally talk to me and you're interested in my views as an individual and not an agent of Marvel, then that's a fine conversation to have. And I've had some really great conversations that have come out of that. To have to break the news to people sometimes that, you know, not just because someone works at a company, not everyone has access to everyone and can get your foot in the door.
Yeah, it's so true, right? There's still always that hierarchy with everything. And, you know, and again, that's true with every company. And because again, like as we were saying before, if everyone did have that access who worked there, they'd be getting, you know, tons and tons of screenplays every day, because you'd have the two people, the one who's always putting the A-plus stuff and then the other one who's just giving in everything that comes across their desk.
Yeah, well, and the other funny thing is, you know, I tell people, you know, I say, look, I don't feel comfortable giving my stuff to the producers and being like, hey, I know I only do the credits and work in business affairs, but I think I've got a great script for you. If I don't feel comfortable doing that with my own stuff, I'm definitely not going to feel comfortable doing that with yours. And by the way, if someone ever did come to me out of, you know, and bizarrely wanted to know what the credits guy thought about, you know, potential writers, the first script I gave them would be mine, obviously. So, you know, there's a bit of a queue you've got to get into, and you're at the back of that queue. So it's, it's always interesting to see how that dynamic works. But yeah, it's very tough and it's very hard because, like I said, as a writer myself, I really want to encourage people and give them all the help I could possibly give for, you know, them advancing their career or improving their writing ability. So it's always hard when you have to tell people no, but sometimes the expectation is a bit unrealistic, and you do have to say no, just because it's just not feasible that, you know, you can be helped in that way.
Yeah, and there's a million ways to sort of get your foot in the door. And that's a lot of things we talk about too on this podcast, is there's a lot of different things that you can do rather than just try to say to somebody like, hey, look, can I get you my script? You know, if you work at Marvel or Pixar or wherever. And it's always, again, you have to be professional at all times. I have the rule of three. What I talk about, Jeff, is number one is be professional. Number two is offer value. And number three is kill with kindness. And with those, that's what I use on social media, and that's what I use in real life as well, is just because those three things, that's how, I mean, people always ask me how I network with all these different people, and that's how I do it. You know, be professional. I'm always professional with you know, whoever I'm talking to, or whoever I'm emailing or on social media. Two, I offer some kind of value. And three is I kill with kindness. If somebody tells you to go, you know, hey, screw you, or, you know, whatever, or even if they get a little, maybe not even to that degree, maybe they just get a little aggressive in a meeting, or maybe get a little, the tone's a little bit off in an email, you can't really give in to that, if you know what I mean. You have to sort of go the other direction. And that's those three things that I've used to sort of get my foot into a lot of places.
Yeah, you know, with networking, I kind of say the same thing. I give a lot of people advice about networking. And you know, networking is not, you know, showing up at a convention or a seminar or something and handing someone a business card and saying, great, now we've met, will you read my stuff? You know, networking has to be a two-way street. And the advice I usually give people is, one, if you're going to ask someone for it, like if you're networking to try to make connections and find someone that can help your career, especially if you're trying to do that where you have an ulterior motive, you need to meet and have a friendly conversation at least 3 to 5 times where you don't bring up your work, because you need to get to know them and show them that you are not just interested in pushing your work on them, that you value a relationship with them, that you value a connection to them. And they're not going to get that if the first 5 minutes you meet them, you're asking them to read a script. And the other part that is really hard for some people to do, but I say is, look, if you want to network with people and truly make the kinds of valuable connections that will help your writing, you have to be helpful to them as well. And it's like you said with one of your points, you know, see what you can do for them, not just what they can do for you. And I have built, you know, I started in this industry with no connections. My family's not in this industry. No one, I had to start from the ground up. I started as an intern, and then I started as an assistant, and I worked my way up. And all the connections I have now you know, and I do have connections at a company where I can say, hey, I read a, you know, I wrote a script. Will you read it? But all of those have been built on years and years of developing relationships with people where I'm doing them as many favors as they're doing me, where we're just enjoying being around one another and talking and getting to know each other as people. Those are all the people that I have the ability to send my script to. Even after almost 15 years in this industry, you know, if I'm meeting someone new, I'm at the same disadvantage. I can't just call someone up and say, hey, you've never heard of me before, but will you read something of mine? I still have to develop that relationship. And that's what I think is so important with people when it comes to networking is you can't see it as a quick way to, you know, to get what you want out of someone. You need to see it as genuinely building a relationship with someone you want to have a long-term relationship and communication with.
Yeah, and when I, again, because when I say offer value, I mean, to me, if you're going to meet, you want to meet somebody, usually there's a reason for you wanting to meet somebody. Usually I'm not saying going to anybody and just saying, hey, look, let's work together. That's a terrible way to do it. Instead, you know, you find out who you want to meet or, you know, not so much as you could see, hey, what can I get from that person? But, you know, hey, look, this is a person that I want to be, or this is a person that, you know, I would like to have as a mentor. You know what I mean? And that way you can, it makes the relationship make a lot more sense rather than if I walked up to you, Jeff, at a networking event, say, hey, what can, you know, this guy works at Marvel or this guy has worked with the Weinsteins. Hey, what can you do for me, Jeff?
Yeah, and you know, and I think it's important, especially for newer people that maybe haven't been in the industry as long. I mean, I know that certainly when I started out, my first question was, you know, well, what value do I offer to someone? I'm a nobody. And the thing is, you know, value comes in so many different ways, and that's the beauty of getting to know someone and networking is if you do it right, you get a chance to really get to know someone, and maybe there is something you can do. You know, if you're an accountant. And you meet someone and you want to talk about screenwriting and stuff, but they mention that they're, you know, having problems with their taxes. Is that something you know about, or you know a friend who, you know, can help him answer a question? That's a great way you can help someone. Similarly, you know, a lot of times it's just about being there and letting someone talk. So if you can be the person that, you know, gets lunch with an assistant that has a really tough boss at an agency that just is ripping into them every day. If you can be the person that, you know, sits there and, you know, and says, you know, gee, tell me about your day. You know, what was frustrating? What was exciting? Just being that sounding board sometimes can be enough. So, you know, it's really important to realize that, you know, networking doesn't always have to be, you know, I have endless resources that I can, you know, materially or financially help someone with. Sometimes it's just being an ear that someone can lean on, or, you know, being the kind of person that can connect other people and say, oh, you know, hey, it's really great to talk to you. I'm sorry you're going through that. I actually have another friend that might, you know, have some advice for that. Let me give him a call. I mean, that's so much of what networking is, that, you know, anyone can do that regardless of where you are, because we all have friends and connections and people we know in our other lives that, you know, can help each other as humans.
Yeah. Very true. And like they say, your net worth is your network. And, you know, having that deep network, or, you know, introducing different people, you sort of become like the networking hub. You know what I mean? And that's what I've kind of become in my circle of people here. It's like I'm always, you know, people will ask me a question or whatever. And, you know, I might have an answer for him in terms of, hey, look, I have a friend who is, like you just said, he's going through the same thing, or he went through this, or he whatever. You know, when at various networking events here in Philly, I remember one time I actually made a TV pilot, and I had a bunch of people say, hey, listen, can we talk to Dave? And we went to ask him for advice. And I, you know, sometimes the advice I gave them isn't what they wanted to hear, because they wanted to get sponsors and they thought the sponsors were going to pay them like six figures. And I'm like, it doesn't work like that. Trust me, it does not work like that, especially if you're just making it on your own and you don't have like a huge following. It's this whole there's a whole process that you have to go through. They want to know that you have a built-in network or a built-in audience, you know what I mean, before they could give in six-figure deals for putting, you know, or mentioning that, you know, Johnsonville Beer sponsored this episode. It's all those little things that go into this that make up a whole, you know what I mean? It's kind of like a synergetic effect of, you know, all these different things that make it up. So when you do give advice, sometimes it's not what people want to hear, but it's what they have to hear.
Yeah, and that's one of the hard things about this industry in particular, is that, again, there's so much glitz and glamour and, you know, and stories about, you know, quick successes around this, that a lot of people have a hard time understanding how the industry really works. And I talk about this a lot. Bob and I actually both you know, have a lot of conversations with people about the business side of things, because he and I both come from a business background, and I, you know, work on the business side of the industry. So a lot of the conversations I have are, you know, I understand that this is how you want things to work, or this is how you think things should work, but, you know, because of business considerations, you know, here's how it actually works. And it can be hard because, you know, people want to believe that things work, you know, more easily or something than they do. I mean, a perfect example of this is, you know, screenplays. When someone submits a screenplay, there's almost always someone in the conversation that says, well, I just don't understand why companies can't read every screenplay that someone sends them. I mean, how hard is it for them to actually, you know, just give us a shot, just read something and, you know, and let us know if it works. You know, it's not fair that we have to submit to an agent and that there's all these gatekeepers. We should just be able to send our scripts and have a company read it and tell us that they like it. And it's hard because, you know, there are some real world business concerns, which is that, if a company were to read every script that was sent to them, you know, Marvel would never make movies. They would be reading scripts 24 hours a day, and still wouldn't get to all of them because they would have, you know, 10,000 scripts a week that people were sending trying to get made. And on top of that, I mean, there's legal concerns. There's, you know, people who have a script read and then think that if something similar appears in another script that they've been, you know, ripped off. So there's all these business concerns that, you know, that prevent people from just reading everything that comes in. But it's really hard to have those conversations with people who, like you mentioned, you know, have specific ideas about how things should work. And when you try to tell them how things actually work, a lot of times they, you know, they get hurt, angry, defensive, because that's not what they want to hear. And it can be really tough to have those conversations where, you know, you're trying to act in someone's best interest and help them, you know, help them understand how things work so they have a better perspective and they can anticipate, you know, responses. But then when some people just don't want to hear it, and that's really hard to deal with.
Yeah. And very true. And, you know, that's where we go back to talking about the negative attitudes of certain people. If those people have that entitlement attitude or don't want to, they're very hard headed, don't want to hear anything. It's always best to just sort of let those people make, you know, hey, that's their own journey to go on, and just let them go do their thing, because you can't bring them with you. You can't work on anything with them, because then you're going to be dealing with their craziness, you know, all of that expectation and reality. You know, it's kind of like a pendulum. It goes back and forth. It's in expectations. And then when it finally goes, swings back to reality, it's just like, you know, it just hits them like a truck, and it's just best not to, you know, work with people like that. And it's just it's always good to find, you know, awesome people. And again, you don't want to rush into a relationship with anybody. You always want to make sure that everyone is on the same page, not crazy, you know what I mean, not just going to wake up in the middle of the night and start, you know, sending out emails. And I've seen that before too, by the way, Jeff. I've had a friend of mine, he had a project with somebody, and the editor one night at like 3 o'clock in the morning said he woke up and had to read their contract again, and he didn't agree with any of it. And he was like, I'm getting screwed over on this. And he's like, what the hell is this? He's like, you know, how does this, you know, how does this stuff like this happen? But again, that's why it's always good to sort of, you know, like they say in business, hire slow, fire fast.
Yeah, it's hard. And, you know, and there are so many great resources out there for people that really are looking to have, you know, a long-term career. And that's the biggest, you know, advice I can give people is, you know, you need to see this as a long-term career. If you want to be a screenwriter, you know, there will be ups, there will be downs, but nothing will be fast in this industry. Things may happen fast after a long period of dormancy or effort, but it's not a way to make a quick buck. It's not a way to get quick success. And the people who understand that, you know, that it is a process, you can have productive conversations with them. And there's a lot of people in the industry that are really great and can offer you advice on different areas, if you're willing to listen. But yeah, if you're one of those people that, you know, is set in your ways and determined that things should work the way you think they should work, then yeah, there's going to be an awful lot of people that say, I'm sorry, I just don't have the time to butt heads with you and fight with you about why things aren't the way you want them to be.
Yeah, you know, very true. And it's just, again, to let those unprofessional people just sort of do their own thing. But, you know, Jeff, you know, we've been talking for about 55 minutes now. And I just want to ask, you know, in closing, is there anything that we didn't get a chance to talk about that you may want to talk about now, or anything you want to say to sort of put a period at the end of this whole conversation?
I think the only thing I'd mention, and I hate to plug myself, but I started a blog called All Rights Reserved, WRITES. And it's a little slow, day job's a little taxing, but what I'm doing with that blog is I'm posting a lot of mostly business advice. I'm trying not to be one of those bloggers that talks about, you know, purely, you know, creative stuff and how to write screenplays and stuff. What I have designed this website to be is I want All Rights Reserved to be a place where people can come and find information about the confusing aspects of the business. So, for example, I post things about, you know, what it's like to join the Writers Guild, you know, how I'm doing a post right now about how profit participation works, you know, how different types of compensation are paid, clauses in a contract that a writer should look out for. So what I'm trying to create ultimately is by the time I've exhausted all of my ideas, is I want it to be a repository where aspiring screenwriters can come and really look up, you know, look up business terms, look up things they're concerned about in a contract so that they don't get into situations where they're signing something they don't understand. And at 6 a.m., you know, one day look at the contract and say, oh my God, how did I sign that? I got screwed. So the idea with that website is eventually to become an area where writers can better educate themselves about the business that they're in, because so many writers are about, you know, the creative process, but so few resources are about, you know, about the nuts and bolts business behind it. So if anyone's interested in that kind of stuff, I would recommend checking out allrightsreserved.com. And there's even a contact page on there where if people have specific questions, they can submit them. And, you know, time permitting, it may take me a couple of weeks, but time permitting, I can respond if you have specific questions. I do have to clarify and say I'm not actually an attorney. I just work with them. So it's not actual legal advice, but it's someone who's worked around business contracts in the industry for the better part of 15 years and has at least some kind of layman's advice for people who are looking to just better understand the business around their writing.
And Jeff, I will link to that in the show notes too at, you know, davebowles.com. Jeff, where can people find you out on Twitter?
So on Twitter, I'm at jwillis81. I don't tweet as much as I usually do. Like we talked at the beginning, you know, there's so much negativity on the site. I tend to not like to post on social media unless I have something positive to say. And you know, I'm human. There are unfortunately days and sometimes weeks where I don't have anything nice to say, so I just don't say anything at all. But at jwillis81 is where I tweet sporadically on Twitter, and then at All Rights Reserved, WRITES, reserved.com is my blog as well. And anyone who wants to follow me can check me out either of those places.
And again, I'll link to them at in the show notes at davebullis.com. Twitter, you can follow me at dave_bullis. And the podcast, obviously, is at DB Podcast. And Jeff Willis, I want to say this has been a freaking blast, man. Again, I'm glad we could actually connect. And again, small world. We have so many mutual friends.
Absolutely. We'll have to talk again soon.
Yeah. Let's do it, Jeff. And I wish you the best luck with everything, man.
You too, man. You too. Take care.
Take care, Jeff.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Inside the Screenwriter's Mind at screenwritersmind.com.